coming up this week on the Course of Life podcast. I did it again with another shockingly easy wire-to-wire winner on the PGA Tour. X and Patty Ice rolled in NOLA, plus the ladies played a visit to an iconic Hollywood course. We're tuned into a cardinal sin committed on reality television and a throwdown of epic proportions. This week's guest is a twofer, first up Holy Moly alum Gerard Dyson, and we also have an NFL draft preview with our expert Cole Thompson, plus NBA playoffs, pastries galore when we always end with food, all of it brought to you by our friends at Desert Fox Golf, makers of the Phone Caddy. I just brought my Phone Caddy out for my round last Friday, Mike, and again, I playing with other people and seeing their thoughts when I'm out on the course and I use the Phone Caddy is great because they're genuinely surprised and they're curious what that little device is, and then they see me clamp my phone in super easily and have it available when I need to be, and they get it. You'll immediately get it too by going to desertfoxgolf.com and checking out the Phone Caddy. Our promo code is CourseOfLife to save 10% off. Again, promo code CourseOfLife to save 10% off your Phone Caddy at desertfoxgolf.com.
Hello, interwebs, and welcome to Course of Life, part of the Morning Read Podcast Network. We are proud to be presented by our friends at Desert Fox Golf, Toasty Snacks, and Volvic. I'm Michael, he's Alex. And Alex, you got some success this week down in New Orleans, thanks to Xander Schauffele and Patrick Cantlay, two best friends who played together in the Zurich Classic. And a wire-to-wire win for them, so you get to cash in your ticket there for that. And two of us now got some wins on this early spring season.
That's right. We both have two now in 2022. That was my second winner with my Twitter and Run Your Pool picks that you can see on runyourpool.com and Twitter at Course of Life 1. Weekly, I'm throwing picks out, and this was a pretty easy one. I mean, unanimously, when you looked up and down the roster of two-man teams at the Zurich, Mike, you know, there were lots of cool two-man teams and lots of teams of guys that get along well and you knew might gel, but this was one of those teams where you look at it and you say, if Patrick Cantlay and Xander Schauffele multiply their powers together, they are the greatest sum in terms of a two-man team, just in terms of raw talent, and they put it together and got the win easily.
Yeah, they really kind of put on a clinic all weekend of just how you play golf in general, and just rolled to victory.
Up 5-6 for most of the day. The lead started to flounder a little bit on Sunday, but it just never really was in doubt. That the Sam Burns Billy Horse team, who I also had in my picks at 12-1, was making a nice little run at the lead there, but came up a couple short. It was a bit of a snoozer, admittedly, for the team competition format. It was great to see the players driving off each other. The walk-up music energy is always fun. But as for the actual drama of the golf, there wasn't a whole lot on Sunday afternoon. It was a foregone conclusion, and X and Patty Ice just took care of the putts they needed to. And I mean, again, with those two guys, I wasn't worried about like the 3, 4, 5, 6 footer for par like at any moment on Sunday. But those were as good as gold with them.
And this once again, I'm going to bring this up once again, that I want an event like this, but I want the teams to be a PGA Tour member and an LPGA Tour member.
Yes, that's what I want. You do love mentioning this. This is one of your sticking points in golf, is you want this this team mixed doubles event, if you will, right?
Yes. Yes, I want it somewhere. Even if they, for right now, do it in the Olympics, which is where they really need to be doing it. I mean, it's got to be happening somewhere.
I mean, basically, you've seen that the Zurich was a stroke play event, if you remember. And they just decided, you know what, we just need to add a little life to this tournament and bring in better fields. Let's change the format. Why can't we try this mixed doubles format with just another lower level tournament that's looking for a little bit of a bounce in audience attendance and viewership and sponsorship dollars? So
exactly.
Yeah, always something we want to throw out because I want to see it come to fruition in the future.
Yeah, because it doesn't matter how many alligators we see out there on the course. It's the team golf element that makes this so exciting.
Yeah, that was my wildlife headline of the week, Mike, because I just played in Florida a few weeks back. Mm-hmm. And I kind of semi-purposely went to some a different course in the Naples area there that you and I have not been to, because yeah. I heard there were a lot of gators in this course. And lo and behold, I did see a few. I didn't see a ton, but I posted them on Instagram for during my trip. But this course, TPC Louisiana, was just absolutely flooded with gators. There were interactions with players, caddies, fans almost at times. The gators were everywhere this week.
They really were. Let's switch, though, from New Orleans and alligators to the glitz and glamour of L.A. and Hollywood, because the LPGA was at Wilshire Country Club for their event out there. And Nasa Hataoka,
love that name.
Whose name was named by her parents in honor of NASA so that she could aspire to great heights. And she got a W. So you know there what? You go.
The way space travel is going these days, who says that she can't get into space? Being an iconic professional female athlete, like
it's true.
That could be feasible for her in the near future.
It's true. It's very true. And she took a big five-stroke victory at the Dio Implant LA Open. And
it was just cool to see them play at Wilshire Country Club. This is one of those LA courses where if you kind of follow any like celebrities on Instagram, you've seen at one moment or another, they pulled up to Wilshire. It's a course that literally sits right in the throngs of Hollywood. Our past guest and friend, RDB, Rondo Barrios, played some rounds there with Joe Pesci and some other notable celebs. So it's just one of those iconic Hollywood spots. And it was neat to see the LPGA pros there. And it's a good look to see the LPGA at some of these cooler urban courses. I like the vibes.
And we know that over the next few years, they're going to be at more and more of these iconic courses. So great start in the glitz and glamour of Hollywood for them.
Yes.
Let's talk about the Champions Tour real quick, because it was the Club Core Classic. And Scott Parel, you know who Scott Parel is?
Yeah, you know. I know his name just because I'm in the throngs of the Champions Tour fandom, but I know he's got some sort of strange backstory in that, like, he's like completely distant from golf at one point in his life. Is that right?
More or less. I mean, he notched a win in the playoff at Club Core. This was his fourth win in 3 years the Champions Tour, which is pretty impressive. Pretty good. Pretty good. He's never played on the PGA Tour, did not play college golf. He only had one win on the Corn Ferry Tour, but here he is like raking him in at the Champions Tour.
And I think he was literally a computer programmer for like several years or the better part of a decade.
Like
just quite literally your average dude, like three cubicles down. What was Scott Parel for like a good portion of his adult life. And here he is just living out his dream past the age of 50.
I mean, basically what this is that you can find yourself on tour at any age. So all of us that are in our mid-30s right now,
I feel like our game sucks. The dream's not dead. We should tell our wives the dream's not dead.
Exactly. It's okay.
All right. I'm going to let her know that I need to start practicing for the Champions Tour because I do have time and I can make this happen. We'll see.
Plenty of time. Let's hop the ponds and head all the way over to the LIV Saudi Tour. Because, oh man, we got names. We got people who are actually registering to play against these amateurs.
Yes. Yes, they are. So we got some name announcements. I've been begging on Twitter that this Saudi tour that's set to rival the PGA Tour with dirty oil money investment thrown into it needed to name names. We were just getting a lot of fun, glitzy flyers and fire festival-looking promises, but no guarantees of who's actually going to be there. Well, the official word is in. Robert Garrigus is the first name that was listed, by the way. Very unimpressive name. Led the PGA Tour in driving about 10 or 15 years ago. Hasn't been relevant in a long time. That was the first name that got dropped for the LIV Tour.
So he could lose to the amateurs that are going to play?
He very much could. So then after that, we were wondering what was going to happen from here. And then the second domino headline fell that, allegedly, they're saying 15 of the top 100 ranked golfers in the world have registered and applied to play in the first LIV Tour event. Now, that doesn't mean that they've been accepted and they're going to play. It means they basically submitted information to the PGA Tour saying, I'm reporting myself for being a bad boy. I'm going to go take this oil money. Tell me what my punishment is. So we're going to see what happens from here and see what the reaction is to these 15 players that have put this registration application in. We can confirm that Phil Mickelson is one of those names per a press release on Twitter. So it's going to be interesting to see what the ramifications are for this alleged set of 15 names. Again, we've named names, but we haven't named all of them yet.
Yeah, I mean, Phil's not maybe that surprising, other than the fact that, you know, he's doubling down maybe on everything that he said, that's, you know, he just wants to make more money.
And needs it now, desperately, for no reason. No,
which I don't understand what he's done with all of his money. I mean, he's made so much money in his career just playing the game, never mind all of his sponsorships and investments and everything else he's done.
Which does sketch you out a little bit and makes you wonder why he all of a sudden needs this gigantic lump sum of money immediately, right?
Yeah. Now he also said, like, the statement that came out said that he's not sure where he's going to play next, that it could be out in London for this LIV event. It could be at the PGA. It could be at the U.S. Open. So he's registered at all these events and hasn't decided what he's going to do yet. So,
okay, we'll see. We'll be tuned in. Obviously, I'm curious what these alleged 15 names are and what comes of that story.
Yep. Let's look ahead to this weekend with what's going on next for the PGA Tour. It's the Mexico Open at Vedanta.
Yes. New everything, new course,
what?
New tournament. Who dis? This is, it's all brand new, Mike. This is not the WGC Mexico that you're thinking of, up in the mountains where the ball goes a million miles at Chapultepec. That is in the past. We are now talking about a separately run tournament in Puerto Vallarta. Funny enough, Mike, here's a great segue. A Greg Norman designed golf course in Mexico is where the PGA Tour is going to be this week.
Interesting. BT Dubs, Greg Norman, registered for the Open Championship.
Yeah, speaking of registrations, big week for registrations in the golf week, in the golf world, I see.
Yes. So the guys are headed to Mexico. John Rahm leads the big names in this field.
I said in my Run Your Pool article, which you can check out on runyourpool.com's blog, I'm not going to put lipstick on a pig for this one, Mike. The field's pretty ugly. Outside of John Rahm, Abraham Answer and Carlos Ortiz are the Mexicans representing their homeland. I like Kevin Na just because he's one of the better players in the field who's had some good form. So watch out for him. But it's not a super loaded field this week. A lot of guys taking this week off because we have Quail Hollow next week, Mike. And then we have a week off before PGA for a lot of the world's best. So that looks like the schedule for a lot of the best right now. So it's not the greatest field, but it will be good to see John Rahm in action. I feel like the play is to just put money on Rahm, just like I put money on the favorite this past week. But that seems too easy in my mind.
Yeah, we'll get our full picks out on Twitter on Wednesday so everyone can see and join along. We've been doing pretty well this season, so really you should throw a buck down on whoever we pick.
Yeah, I mean, four wins between us here. We're late April 2022. That's a good pace. I like that.
It's pretty good. Let's switch over for now, though, to Tuned In, where we share what we're getting into outside of the world of sports. I have found a new bingeable, easy to watch, comforting show, Alex.
Nice. I like that. I'm upset at the one that I'm about to bring up. So I'm open ears to a new show like this.
You know how much we love the Great British Bake Off.
Yeah, just give me simple competition style format show. I'm all in. Yeah,
exactly. And Bake Off is about making everyone succeed and making them do well, and they root for each other, and there's no backstabbing, and it's just, I love that kind of show. They're not manufacturing drama in it either. It's just really well done. Well, they have a cousin to that show called The Great Pottery Throwdown, where it is literally the same thing but with pottery. And it is amazing.
I love it. What are they sculpting? Tell me about their creations.
Well, they're throwing clay on the wheel. They're doing pots. They're doing plates. They're doing fine china tea sets. They're doing garden sculptures and garden fountains.
That's lovely.
And every season, there's five seasons out right now. We're in season two. We started last week and we're already in season two. We're almost done with season two.
And this belongs on HGTV too. This is a big time HGTV. I love it.
It is only on HBO Max right now.
Yeah, hopefully.
They're the ones with the streaming rights. So
The Great Pottery Throwdown, great name.
Yeah. It's okay, pretty fantastic.
I'm in the market for a show like that because I've become very offended in the past week by one of my competition shows that you know I watch religiously. So the Spring Baking Championship last week had a faux pas in reality TV that made me gasp. I almost spit the food out that I was eating. I was so offended. Okay, Mike. So basically, we're down to somewhere in the neighborhood of 7 or 6 contestants left. There we started with 14. And a couple weeks prior, there was a contestant named Carolyn who was very popular, but she got eliminated. It was a cookie salad was the final heat bake-off. And it was a very strange item to make because you had to make this strange kind of cream filling and put the cookies on top. Nonetheless, she got eliminated. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, a couple weeks later, multiple episodes after the fact, the host and judges just announce that Carolyn is just back on the show. We just feel bad that she was eliminated. She's so good and talented, and we want to give her a second chance, and she's just back on the show. They have just completely uprooted the entire competition and nature of this format, and I was visibly shaken when I heard about this happen.
I know, you know, I don't watch it because I don't have cable, so it's kind of difficult, but that seems kind of dumb.
I mean, she was eliminated and sent home, not the week before, like multiple weeks before.
As what happens and makes it difficult when you're watching, you know, a movie or TV show where somebody dies but is then brought back to life and you remove the stakes of dying and what they're doing. Mm. We have done that now in this show where just being eliminated doesn't mean you're gone. You could come back. So it removes the stakes of being eliminated.
It really stuck with me, Mike. You know, I'm a big fan of the Baking Championship series on Food Network, but that really stuck in my craw. So I'm going to have to take some time to get over that. I can't have Carolyn winning the whole thing. That's for sure. That will completely throw me off if she comes back to the show and wins this whole thing. So we'll see how the drama plays out on Spring Baking.
Well, tune into the Great Pottery Throwdown and we can talk about it here on the air.
Sounds good.
Let's go ahead and get into this week's guest. We're in a bit of a holy moly run right now, and it just happens to coincide with the season 4 premiere coming up next Tuesday, May 3rd.
Yes.
And we may have even more holy moly related guests coming on the show. We'll talk more about that when we have more details. But for now, we got Gerard Dyson. Coming on the show.
Cool guy from season 2. You remember him as Sergeant Swag. He told some really cool stories from his time on the show and also just his life in Atlanta as well, and checking out the pros at Eastlake. Really fun conversation with Gerard here.
We'll get into that conversation in just a moment. But first, let's talk about, as we always do at this time in the show, our favorite golf ball, the Volvic ball. It's bright yellow or orange or red. They have white too, but why would you go white? I mean, really, why would you play a white ball these days when you can play the number one brand in colored golf balls? And that's the Volvic Vivid and the Volvic XT Soft. It just gives you fantastic control around the greens with all these balls. I love playing with the Vivid. I know, Alex, you do as well.
Yep.
And it's the Vivid gives you less spin off the driver for straighter tee shots, more feel around the greens for lower scores. And it's the number one matte finish ball in golf as well, which is just fantastic. The XT Soft also has a lot of fun colors as well and is a great ball to play. And Volvic spends their money on their balls, not on marketing. That's why they're able to afford us, if we're being perfectly honest. So you can check them out for yourself at volvic.com. That's VOLVIK.com. Performance in color. Volvic has a ball for every swing.
Next up from East Atlanta, Georgia, he's a Holy Moly alum, so he's automatically a friend of the show, the CEO of Dyson Golf, and a U.S. Army veteran as well. It's Gerard Dyson joining the Course of Life. Gerard, how are we doing tonight?
Doing really good. Doing good. Doing great. Thank you for having me on, sir.
Absolutely. Yeah, we have a lot of cool connections that we'll get to regarding your experience on Holy Moly. But I first want to start off by thanking you for your service. I know you're a veteran of the U.S. Army. I'm curious, where did you serve when you were in the Army?
I served in Fort Campbell, Kentucky, at the 101st Airborne Division. And I also served in Korea, where I was at the 55 Air Defense Artillery at Camp Casey.
Wow, very impressive. Okay, so I'm curious for deployment and all your time in service. I've interviewed a lot of different people on the podcast who have been, you know, serving or been deployed, and they've always talked about how they were able to like find golf, like with their troops, or find golf on their base camp or where they're deployed. Did you ever get to play any like random golf when you were in service at all?
Exactly. And you know what, at Fort Campbell, Kentucky, they had a golf course there. I used to drive by it all the time and never played, but I always looked over at the guys hitting the ball. And it's interesting that I was younger then, of course.
Yeah.
I never got to play there, but they did definitely have golf available for veterans. And as I got older and started playing, I see why, you know, it's good to have a golf course out there on the military base.
Yeah, man, everyone finds the game at different times in life. I'm just glad you did when you did. Very cool. So let's talk about your game and just in general. Tell me how often you get to play. And I'm curious, before we get into your holy moly experience, have you had a lot of mini golf experience, or do you have more experience playing on actual golf courses?
I have more experience playing on the actual golf course. But when it comes to playing mini golf, I do play a lot, because around here in northern Georgia or northern Atlanta, they have like three different mini golf courses. One of them's called Pirate Grove. And being a member of the Big Brother, Big Sister of Atlanta, I would always take they call them a little, and I'm considered as a big. Yeah. So I always say that I would take my little out to the mini golf course so that he can get used to putting. And then I told him, once he get a little bit older, we can get out there and start hitting some clubs.
Yeah, definitely. You know what? Mini golf's a really easy way to bond with people, no matter what level of experience they have in the game. So that's really, really neat of you. In terms of your actual golf play on the course, I see you're a lefty. Are you a lefty at like all sports or just golf?
Yes, a lefty at all sports. But the interesting thing is that I write with my right hand, and I cannot write with my left hand.
Go figure. But everything else is lefty, though. Interesting.
Yeah.
Love that. Very cool. So Gerard, we saw you
bowler, but when I do bowl, I bowl with my left hand.
Nice. Yeah, I'm lefty bowling, kicking, basketball, but for some reason I swing a golf club righty. So everyone's their random tendencies, indeed. We saw you on season two of Holy Moly, like I was mentioning, as Sergeant Swag. I'm curious. I know everyone has kind of interesting background to their appearance on Holy Moly. For I guess a two-part question: how did you get on the show, and then where does the swag come from in Sergeant Swag?
Definitely. So I was able to get on the show. Of course, someone had contacted me by seeing my YouTube channel, and they also had looked at my Instagram page. So they actually introduced me to one of the casting agents. So then, of course, I had to go through the casting process, which was pretty intense. Of course, I'm sure you heard that before.
Oh yeah,
and once I was able to get through the casting process, you know, it was I was on the show.
Nice. So where did Swag come from in Sergeant Swag?
So during the process, as the casting directors and everyone got to know me a little bit better, you know, they always say, "Hey man, you answer these questions so smooth," and "Hey man, I love that outfit that you have on. You have so much swag." And so they said, "You know, I like that Sergeant Swag."
I like that. Yeah, you do have that smooth delivery. Indeed.
Definitely. So it was a combination of me interviewing and someone's innovative idea.
Very cool. So Sergeant Swag was born for season two. Yes. You had an icy moment on the slip and slide there, which is very treacherous. One thing I always ask people about shooting, and I know you have interesting stories about getting to the set as well too, but was it freezing cold shooting on the set? I've always heard that, yes. But I wanted to confirm from you.
Yes, I am not a fan of cold weather. When I got to California, I was thinking, oh yeah, it's going to be sunny, sunshine. But when you tape at night, which is, of course you see during the show once it airs, that it's dark outside.
Oh yeah.
So of course you're filming at night, and in California it gets a little cold and windy where the shooting location was. And so, you know, it was freezing to me out there. And I was so nervous to have to play an event that required you to fall into the water. And I actually was going to be on an event, but something happened and I ended up finding out that I was going to be playing slip and putt. And of course, you see, I played it against Miss Connie, who I love to death. We're still good. Me and Miss Connie became good friends after Holy Moly. I just spoke to her last week, actually. And, you know, it was interesting that we were on her nemesis, you know, which is she was the most fearful of. And I actually was like, you know, I'll take that other than falling into cold water. But I did take my hand while I was out there and reach down and see how cold it really was. And that's when I knew for sure it wasn't meant for me to fall in.
Yeah, that's right. Whenever you do that test and you snap your hand back, that's when you know it's not water you want to be jumping in the middle of the night.
It's not the same thing as just falling in some cold pool water.
Love that. Yeah, it was a cool experience. I'm curious, just on the whole, everyone walks away with different experiences from being in that live TV setting. It's certainly a unique setting to shoot the show like that where you do. What was your biggest kind of takeaway or lesson from the experience being on Holy Moly?
My biggest thing was to see how much goes into actually producing a show, how you have to pull everyone in from all across the country, how many cameras are actually shooting at the time of the show, you know, and how many lights are in your face, actually, which can bring on some pressure. You know, we all think that is you get a little nervous when you have spectators. But when you have spectators, cameras in your face, you know, people cheering, Jeannie Mai standing on the sideline looking at you, you know, it could definitely add a little bit more pressure.
Definitely.
Your putting skills. And it doesn't help when they add slippery glue, freezing cold weather. You know, you all you can do is the best that you can. But I wanted to make sure Miss Connie would be safe because I know that, you know, at not that she's elderly, but at her age, I know she did not want to fall too much on that ice.
I don't blame you. Yeah, no, it's a very cool moment. People can check that out as well on the internet or YouTube. Gerard Dyson here joining us. It's DysonGolf_ATL on Instagram. Let's go through some highlights of some cool things I saw on your Instagram feed. Everyone can check out the Dyson Golf YouTube page as well too. But on Instagram specifically, I saw you got to have a very cool honor, which not a lot of people can say, and that was play golf with an Olympian, Olympic bobsledder Asia Evans. I'm curious what that experience like and what her game was like as well.
Well, man, that was a really, really, really cool experience to get to go out there and actually see a three-time Olympian hit a golf ball. Of course, athletes pick up the game, and she's kind of new to playing the game is what she told me. And so to see how her athletic skills allow her to pick up instruction so fast that she was hitting balls further than me, almost I would say further than me, but really hitting balls really far for being a beginner, it just shows the skill that she has and why certain people can separate themselves to become Olympians.
Yeah, that's neat to hear from you firsthand. It's funny, I was trying to make parallels between bobsled and golf, and I think the one thing I came to is there's definitely a lot of body control in bobsledding. Yeah. And I feel like she probably is able to take that to the golf course pretty quickly.
Yes, and you know, being able to lift over 300 pounds dead weight doesn't hurt either.
and that fearlessness, Gerard, I've seen those bobsled competitions on NBC, the Olympics. The speeds they go, unbelievable.
Exactly.
Crazy. One other thing I noted on your feed, which is something I've done a lot of cool things in golf, I will say, pat myself on the shoulder for that, but I've yet to hit balls at an MLB stadium, and you had the opportunity to experience the Stadium Links experience, which has been brought to baseball parks all over the country. And I'm going to get there soon, but I want you to give perspective on what it's like to hit balls in the stadium at that huge elevation down to the field.
Oh, man, it of course, it's been an awesome year for the state of Georgia, having the Braves, you know, to win.
Yeah, congrats.
Series, and then have Stadium Links come right after, you know, they won the World Series, which was already pre-planned, but they wouldn't have known that they would actually won the World Series by the time they had it planned. Very cool. To get to go there and see the setup, and it was amazing. They had, you know, of course, some of the Brave stuff was still out there. The way that you go to the different levels and hit balls, and it was the coolest experience. I was so thankful to be able to go out there. Stadium Links at It wasn't expensive either. I wanted to just add that in. But what I will say is that now that Stadium Links seems like it's getting a little bit more popular, there was a lot of golfers out there compared to what they said it was out there the few years prior.
Yeah, man, the game is booming for sure. And concepts Definitely. Like this make it even more popular. I'm curious, what's the elevation, kind of like the distance? Like, you know, you're hitting from like the upper decks down to the field. I'm sure it was taking a couple clubs off the actual like yardage for how far the wedges were, right?
Exactly. And let's, I'll give you a great example of one of the holes said that it was, we had their little range finders. It'll say that it's 150, but you, if you're up on the four, you know, if you're up on that high level, you don't really have to do too much. You have to really adjust for elevation, but that's a whole nother level of adjusting for elevation.
Yeah, interesting. Very cool shot to hit.
Nothing was cooler, man. My favorite part out there was one of the hole locations was pretty much right at the home base. So when you hit your drive off or you hit your irons off, it looked like you're hitting them right out for a home run. So I love that.
Yeah, that's that dream. Whenever I go to a baseball stadium, is I always picture myself teeing up a driver and banging one over the fence. Yeah, you know? Yeah, you got to live that out. Very cool stuff. And then one other thing I had to touch on, I want to talk a little current events in golf, because I know you love posting a lot of Tiger Woods content. We obviously are just coming off an unbelievable return from Tiger to the game and him teeing it up and playing and finishing 72 holes just a year after what went down with him with the near-death experience and the accident. I'm curious, just as a golf fan and your perspective, what did that mean for you to see Tiger return like that?
You know, as a disabled veteran, you know, seeing Tiger Woods be able to recover and go out and, you know, just even be able to walk 18 holes, because we as golfers know that walking 18 holes isn't just a little easy thing to do, especially if you're not in condition. Yeah. So to see him to, you know, go through a tragic event, come back out, go through the work, because of course, you know, we've seen him play, but of course there was a lot of hard work in between. And that goes for, you know, Army veterans as well. You know, military veterans, you see those guys go through a lot of different programs, disabled veterans, to get themselves back on track. And golf happens to be one of the things that it is a peaceful thing that can get you back on. So to see Tiger go out there and walk 18 holes after an event like that, it just was really inspiring to me as a golfer and as a human being to, you know, show that you don't give up even under the harshest circumstances.
Yeah, man, you can't ever doubt Tiger Woods. That guy has the will to get back and upright better than
me.
He
had some great shots, man. The slow motion shots that they showed on the Golf Channel, of the extension and the waist rotation.
Yeah.
You can understand, you know, that takes some skill.
And he just gets that all back too. It's like, how did he get that all back? It's amazing.
Exactly. That's amazing, man. So that's a great question.
Mm. Let's get to some quick shots before we wrap here with Gerard Dyson, holy moly alum. It's DysonGolf_ATL on Instagram. All right, just some quick fire questions. Just first thing that comes to your mind. What's your favorite golf apparel brand out right now? What do you like wearing?
Right now, even though I'm definitely a big Puma golf fan.
Yeah.
But I've been really supporting these newer brands like Eastside Golf, the Deuce Co. Company. Mm. They are African-American golf brand companies. And because I know that, you know, as an African-American, you know, I know that we're working towards being more inclusive in the golf industry. And those two brands right there are brands that I've been supporting. The Eastside Golf brand just got a deal with Michael Jordan. So they have shoes. They're at the PGA stores. They're working with NBA players right now. And, you know, the Deuce Co., he just had if you see it on my Instagram, I just was at an event, Deuce Co. Invitational at Atlanta National Golf Club in Alpharetta. That was a great event to promote his brand. We had guys come all across the country. Some of my best buddies, the Bogey Brothers from YouTube, they got to come out here as well. And we had a really good time and was able to promote his brand. And, you know, those are the two brands I've been rocking with this year.
I like that. Yeah, that Deuce brand I saw at the PGA show in January, and I was immediately intrigued. Shout out to that brand as well. In ATL, I know you're big on the golf scene there. I'm curious, what's a public golf course in Atlanta that you would suggest to someone who's visiting the town and wants to get out there?
great public golf course, I would say, if you come to Atlanta, or I would say Stone Mountain Golf Course, although it's a little bit outside of the downtown area.
Yeah.
Stone Mountain Golf Course is one of my favorite because it has some of the best views of the whole locations and the scenery and the fall where the leaves are changing color. It is just beautiful out there. So if anyone came to the city, I would definitely recommend, which is a public course, Stone Mountain Golf Course. They have two courses out there, two 18-hole courses, the Lakemont and the Stonemont course. I'm a big fan of the Lakemont side because I feel like it has the best views.
Okay. Do they have a decent clubhouse as well? Good 19th hole setup? Man.
The clubhouse, they also host weddings there. Of course, it's out there. It's on the park location.
So love that.
The view at the clubhouse is actually, man, stellar view, where you get to see the mountain, the lake, it's ducks out there, and the food in there is just great, man. Every time we go there, we always have mixed drinks. We always get food, and the hospitality is just really good.
That was my perfect segue to our 19th hole question. It's brought to you by our friends at Lynx Drinks. They make transfusions in a can. But for your purposes, Gerard, when you get into that clubhouse at Stone Mountain, what's your go-to order? I'm talking about what's your favorite meal and your favorite drink to have at the 19th hole.
Yeah. Hands down, chicken tenders, seasoned French fries, and a Patron margarita with light ice.
I like that. And the seasoned French fries. Get that little Cajun sizzle on, maybe? I like that. Okay, good touch. Gerard, thank you so much for hopping on the Course of Life. Looking forward to following your golf content. And next time in ATL, we'll connect, all right?
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Pleasure being on.
And we're back. Great chat there with Gerard. Great to hear about everything he's doing. He's only a couple hours away from me up there in Atlanta, which means he gets to go to East Lake. He gets to see the pros play in the Tour Championship.
That's a cool spot, too. And he was talking about how it's such an intimate watch because there's really not huge galleries there at East Lake. Mm-hmm. I highly encourage that. And he did, too. If you have the opportunity to go to any sort of professional golf tournament, you know, within an hour or so where you live, take the opportunity to, and maybe even just go, not even when they're playing a tournament day, and just watch them practice. To see them up close definitely lends a whole new perspective on the game.
It does indeed. And if you like that chat with Gerard, plus everything else we do here on the podcast, go ahead and hit that subscribe button on the podcast app that you're using right now. Give us a rating. 5 stars is always appreciated. Thumbs up. Follow us on Instagram at COL Podcast. You can find each of us individually there, too. He's Course of Life Alex. I'm MWRINC. Twitter is where we talk most of the time during the week, especially with our picks on Wednesday nights. He's at Course of Life 1. I'm at MWRINC. Let's talk a little basketball real quick because not that we're fair weather fans or anything, but we only talk about the Celtics when they're in the playoffs. So Celtics are in the playoffs.
They are. And with a resounding sweep to start things off and one with lots of poetic justice, I would say, too. Mike, you remember Kyrie Irving was previously a Boston Celtic, famously got on the mic and told Celtics fans he was going to re-sign. And then months later, he left and went to Brooklyn from there. It was a very bitter ending between the Celtics and Kyrie Irving. So there's been a little bit of unresolved hatred there for a while. It's bubbled over all the way into this playoff series after all the unvaccinated, not playing drama for Kyrie all year. Very fitting that the Celtics come in and just put the whoop ass on him and sweep them and exit him and Kevin Durant from the playoffs. It was definitely a sweet tasting victory for Celtics fans.
It is always when the Celtics do anything fantastic. So we're rooting for the Celtics all the way here. If and when they lose, we'll stop talking about them.
It's looking like maybe the Bucks next round. We'll see. Mm. So got to beat the defending champions to get it done. That's going to be a tough one.
You know, it seems like just yesterday, Alex, that the Super Bowl was ending and all that fun stuff. But the draft is here. It's right around the corner from us, which means it's time to bring our resident football expert, Colt Thompson, back on the show.
Next up, we have a friend of the show back to preview this weekend's NFL draft, reporter at Fan Nation and host of Just Saying It. It's Cole Thompson joining us. Cole, thanks for hopping on and talking all things draft. How you doing?
Hey, Alex, I'm doing pretty good. I'm excited that it's almost done. And I think a lot of people always go, well, aren't you excited for the draft to be here? No, I'm excited for the pre-draft stuff. Once the draft actually gets here, I can sleep. So that's what I'm excited for.
Yeah, I know you got everyone at your shoulder right now, mocking you for everything you do on Twitter, but you're relentless to say the least. And I love the coverage and you're spot on with a lot of the stuff that we visited last year in our coverage. So we're running it back to talk about this year's draft. So let's just cut to the chase. It's interesting because this year, unlike last year, is not a big quarterback draft. It looks like there's some kind of flash at wide receiver, but what do NFL fans need to kind of expect going in when they're watching the first handful of picks made, and when do you maybe see a first QB taken?
Trades are not going to be a necessity in this year's draft at the very top. You know, in years past, you've watched teams move up into the top five, into the top three to be able to secure a franchise quarterback, but this really isn't the year. Now, four names that continuously are mocked in the first round are Cincinnati's Desmond Ridder, Pitt's Kenny Pickett, Liberty's Malik Willis, and Ole Miss's Matt Corral. And I think that all four could be selected, but I don't think you'll see one of these teams that's picking in like the teens area, like a New Orleans or like a Pittsburgh, do give up all this immense draft capital for one of these guys. If they're not completely sold at this point on them, then they're probably not going to be sold on them to move up, give up future draft capital. And again, you got to keep in mind, to move up into the top 10 from like the 20 range or from the 18 range, it's not just one first round pick. It's multiple first round picks, mid-round selections. You also could potentially be giving up a proven player or whatnot. So there's a lot of questions when it comes to the quarterback position. There's been a report that potentially the Saints, because they got that extra first round pick, they would be moving into the top five to select their quarterback of the future. I've been hearing that they're actually more interested in getting an offensive tackle of the future. They're not looking at getting either Malik Willis or Kenny Pickett. They want to go after a guy like Evan Neal or a Charles Cross to replace the production of what you've seen from Teron Armstead, who signed that mega deal this offseason with the Miami Dolphins. I think if you start to see trades, this is one of those few years where you're not seeing trades for quarterbacks. You're seeing trades for proven players. And I do think that you will see at least three get selected. But the run of where they go is a big question mark. Carolina is probably the first team that makes sense. Atlanta, maybe because of the let go of Matt Ryan, makes sense. But outside of those two, no one in the top 10 really is interested in adding a quarterback this year. And more specifically, teams are not interested in trading up. So it could be a long, long wait for some of these guys in the green room.
Okay, so it's tricky shopping, but it sounds like there's going to be some high drama to see what the order is of these quarterbacks. So that'll be fun to watch for sure. Let's talk about a few teams real quick. One specifically that you cover very well, the Houston Texans here in Texas where we are. They're picking at number 3 and 13, I believe. So what's in store for them and what are they looking to do with those two picks?
Well, kind of like how I mentioned, I don't think they're going to be trading that number 3 pick. You know, Nick Caserio said at his weekly press conference for the pre-draft that they haven't been getting the calls that they want. Okay. They haven't been seeing a lot of draft movement coming up for number 3. So it looks like they're going to be picking at number 3. And they're kind of at the mercy of the big board right now, because according to people that I've spoken to, they really like Akeem Okwuanu out of North Carolina State. But he potentially is in play for the number 1 slot because of Doug Peterson as well is falling massively in love with him. They love cornerbacks. And Lovie Smith has made it abundantly clear this entire offseason they need to get better at the cornerback position. They brought in LSU's Derek Stingley. They've met multiple times with Ahmad Sauce Gardner from Cincinnati. So there's potential to where they shock a lot of people and they draft a corner at number 3. If they are looking to trade, the other thing that I would say, don't rule out a trade up scenario, because I know the Texans are very much intrigued. They've been doing a lot of homework on Derek Stingley, potentially not that number 3 selection, but maybe at pick number 11, maybe at pick number 10, they're trying to move up just to get in front of the Minnesota Vikings. Everyone that I've spoken to has said the floor for Stingley is number 12, so he's not going to be there at 13. If they fall in love with a player, Nick Caserio is going to move up and get him. And this is something that we have noticed since last year. Just because they have 11 picks in this year's class doesn't mean they're going to keep all 11. They would rather go get their guy and feel comfortable about him being on the roster for the next 2, 3, 4 years on a rookie contract than just get 11 players who may or may not fit the system. So they're going to take the best offer available for pick number 13. If that means moving up, they're going to do it. If they love a player, if that means moving down, the process of adding a guy, I wouldn't be shocked for them to be targeting a wide receiver as well. Potentially Chris Olave. Maybe you look at Jameson Williams, if he were to fall a little bit, they're going to be looking at all avenues for that number 13 pick. And I do think that when you look at number three, it really is at the mercy of what happens at number one and two, respectively.
Okay, sounds good. I'll be watching out for them and what they do. That was a great transition to the wide receiver talk I wanted to get into with the New England Patriots at 21. It's interesting. When we talked last year, you weren't scared at the idea of Bill Belichick potentially taking a QB. I thought it was impossible, but damn it, it happened. We got Mac Jones and got back to the playoffs. Now, the current dream for us Patriots fans, Cole, is a wide receiver at this 21 spot. You know, whether it is maybe Williams or Drake London or something like that. Is this possible again, or are we thinking too highly and they're going to go with, you know, an offensive or defensive lineman? What do you maybe see the Patriots and Bill doing at that spot?
If they stay at 21, the only receiver I think that would be available at this point would be Treylon Burks out of Arkansas. And while I know that a lot of people love Treylon Burks' game, myself included, I think that when you look at Burks, it's a name that only fits certain offenses. Bill is going to have to be finding ways to get creative with him. A lot of people were saying he's the next Debo Samuel. I don't see that. I see more AJ Brown mentality, really good physical, hard press guy, works extremely well in his routes, great against man coverage, can find ways to separate with ease, does a really nice job of physical blocking up the middle in the run game as well. So maybe that is someone that you want to target, but if you're staying at 21, everything I keep hearing is linebacker, 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 linebacker. And it is a good linebacker class. So maybe you do go with the cornerback in this selection if one were to fall, and Andrew Booth Jr. from Clemson. Kaiir Elam is a name that I think honestly fills in that void of what was lost by J.C. Jackson. I actually talked to a scout not too long ago. They said that they see so much similarities between Andrew Booth coming out of Clemson and J.C. Jackson when he was coming out of Maryland. It's just the way that he was able to develop is part of the reason why he was so successful. Gerard Mayo said back in February that they know that they need to get more physical and they need to get faster on the defensive side of the football, especially in the back seven. So to me, that puts both N'Kobe Dean from Georgia and Devin Lloyd from Utah potentially in play if one of them is available. So New England can go a lot of different ways. I think with the receiver one, you would have to be willing to trade up a little bit because of once you start seeing one receiver go, the run's just going to continue. And that's with every single position. Once you see one offensive tackle go, they're all going to start going. And once you see one cornerback go, they're all going to start going. So once that run starts, you may have to move up if you're New England for a receiver. The good news is that there's a lot of good depth in this year's class. A lot of guys that could fill the void in rounds two, rounds three, rounds four. But the biggest thing is that you need that number one factor. Like I mean, adding in Devontae Parker was a good move, but he's a high-end number three, a low-end number two at best. Kind of what you already have with Kendrick Bourne, kind of what you already have with Nelson Agholor. You need that game changer. I feel like you're going to have to move up for that. And you're going to need to get one probably within the first 55 picks. So that means that if you don't get a receiver at pick number 21, you better be targeting one at pick number 54.
Interesting. Yeah. And the one other guy, you know, I guess I can throw a little bit of the Jameson Williams dream out for now, but the one other Alabama guy I see a lot connected to Mac Jones and the Patriots is that I believe Slade Bolden. Where's he targeted on your board right now?
I love Slade Bolden's game. I think he's a funny guy. And I think, and you know, I was actually able to talk to him at the combine. He even made jokes about how the Patriots just feel like a perfect fit for him.
I mean, he looks like Julian Edelman 2.0 from a quick glance, just a quick glance.
They love white receivers in the slot, but he is a straight up slot guy. I would say he's a round six, round seven type player. Maybe you send a flyer out with him in one of your late round picks.
Wow.
I actually think that would be really close to the Julian Edelman comparison, and he's going to be a really big superstar in a few years, is Kyle Phillips from UCLA. Circle that name. That's a guy who is really impressive as a route runner, extremely effective in the slot, did a really nice job the last 2 years at UCLA, but UCLA was kind of just an average team, so you never really heard his name. Highly productive player. He's going to make an immediate contribution. He's probably about a fourth round type player, but he also fits kind of what Bill Belichick is looking for.
Nice. Okay, good Patriots talk there. Let's get to my co-host Michael's Giants. Always pondering at a high draft pick. Here they are. They've got 5 and 7, though. What's the deal here? It doesn't sound like, based on what you said, they're not planning to reach on another QB again, we hope or think. Are they keeping both these picks? Are they trading up, down? What's your forecast for the Giants?
So right now it's weird. I could see them trading away number 7. I could also see them trading away number 5 if they get the right offer, because of the reality is that I've been hearing Charles Cross's name basically mentioned nonstop with the New York Giants. They love Charles Cross. They think that Charles Cross has tremendous value. And with Evan Neal potentially still on the board, maybe they could go ahead and get a actual, like maybe they can get some extra draft capital for that number five selection for a team that really wants to move up. So that way they can take Cross at number seven and feel more content. If I were a betting man right now, you know, going back and looking at Joe Shane and Brandon Bean's background in the last couple drafts when he was with Buffalo, they love to address the trenches. Like they've done it every single year in like the very early selections. They've gone offensive line, defensive line, versatile offensive lineman, guys who can play guard, tackle, flex, a guy who can play a defensive end, a guy who can be a pass rusher, a nose technique. They've done this for the last 3 to 4 draft periods. So it wouldn't shock me if they go back-to-back offensive line, defensive line. Kayvon Thibodeau feels like a pipe dream. Like if he's available at number five, turn in the card, feel comfortable, let Carolina make its decision at quarterback or offensive lineman or what they want to do. Maybe it's Evan Neal, maybe it's Akeem Okwunu. And then you can go ahead and feel comfortable taking Charles Cross. The name that I would also consider in this range, and I didn't believe it at first, but now that we're hearing the Kadarius Toney rumors about him potentially getting traded, Garrett Wilson from Ohio State slowly moving up from what I'm hearing on the Giants big board. And I would not be shocked if they were able to get a trade done for Kadarius Toney before the draft. They address the receiver need. They need a true number one. You know, everything that we've seen with Kenny Galladay, the injury concerns, that's a question mark. Darius Slayton is more of a vertical presence. So I wouldn't be shocked if a receiver's the need. I also wouldn't be shocked if Sauce Gardner, the cornerback from Cincinnati, is available. That's an easy pick for them. They are trying to move off of James Bradbury. They're trying to get him traded. They're trying to free up some salary cap space, but they need a number one cornerback. I think that maybe Derek Stingley would be in play. But I know for a fact Sauce Gardner would. So they could go a lot of different ways. Trade is one, but I would not be shocked if they just go best player available at number five, which could be Kayvon Thibodeau, could be Evan Neal, and then surprise people with number seven if they stay put. They really could be surprising. I would not be shocked if they trade Toney, they target a receiver.
Okay, good drama surrounding the Giants as well, too. Again, it's Cole Thompson, Mr. Cole Thompson on Twitter. Let's get to some quick shots. Let's do our two-minute drill here on the NFL draft. We'll start with an easy one. You mentioned a whole lot of trading going on. I guess if you had to pick one team to maybe watch out when their picks up, because this might get traded, who's the team do you think's getting kind of the most frisky with the trade talks and actually pulling the trigger this weekend?
Are you asking me who's the team that would be trading up or the team that would be trading back down?
I'm going to say trade up, definitely, for the drama purposes.
I will go with New Orleans. I think that New Orleans feels like they're a piece or two away from really being a contender. I feel like that they could either be looking at a receiver or an offensive tackle. Jameis Winston did show improvement a lot last season from what we saw with this turnover ratio from Tampa Bay. I feel like if you can go ahead and target like an Evan Neal at pick number five with the New York Giants, give up both first round picks, be able to keep your second and third round selection. That way you could still get a high quality volume number two receiver, maybe a safety on the back end to pair with Marcus May to replace the production of Marcus Williams. They're really close to still being a competitive team in the NFC South.
Nice. Okay. And then let's talk about your favorite wide receiver in the draft class. We highlighted several of them that are all looking to be first round prospects. Who do you think is going to pan out the best in the NFL that we're seeing at the top of this wide receiver class?
I'll give you two, and I'll give you two for different reasons. Number one, my number one receiver in the class with the most potential and upside to me is Garrett Wilson from Ohio State. I watch his game. I love his film. I think that he needs to work on his route tree a little bit. I think he needs to get a lot better when it comes to change of direction, but the potential is there. I mean, when you watch this kid play, I see so much of Stephon Diggs in him. I see a lot of Deontay Johnson in him. He has the speed. He has the physical presence. He can work extremely well in man or zone coverage. He has enough of a route tree to where he should be able to win against smaller cornerbacks very early on. So I like his potential, and I think he has the most upside, the highest ceiling of everyone in the class. The one with the lowest floor, and the one that I think is going to be the most consistent throughout the NFL, that's Chris Olave from Ohio State. I honestly feel like most people are getting lost in the conversation of Olave because of what Wilson did and what we've seen from Drake London's size and Jameson Williams' speed. Olave has really good route running skills. He's really effective after the catch. He has solid hands. Reminds me a lot of Calvin Ridley. I mean, reminds me so much of when you watch him change direction. Just an absolute will beat you not just with speed, but will beat you with the ability to change direction because of his route tree. It's just so flawless. He can play in the slot. He can play on the outside. He can be a vertical presence. He can be a factor after the catch. You can utilize him in a lot of different ways. I think because if he didn't come out last year, we kind of forgot about him. A lot like Justin Herbert when he didn't come out in 2019. And everyone was like, oh, well, he's just going to be, you know, an average quarterback because of we're overanalyzing it. I look at a guy like Chris Olave. I think that the Texans at 13 would absolutely love a player like him. I think the Saints, if they stay put at 16 or 19, would love to compliment Michael Thomas with him. I think the Eagles should be interested. He's going to be a top 20 player, and I do believe that of all the receivers we see in the next 5 years, the one who will consistently be putting up 65, 70 catches, 650 to 800 yards of offense, 4 or 5 touchdowns a season, that's Chris Olave. So to me, maybe he won't ever be a number one receiver, but he's going to be a damn good number two or a very, very good number three.
Okay, so we're definitely high on the Ohio State prospects as well, too. I'll let you pick one more random athlete, and maybe this is the combine guy or the freak numbers guy. Who is the random kind of freak athlete or guy that kind of really eye pops to you when you've done all your draft research? You can go in any direction with this one.
I'll go two real fast. The bigger name guy is Jalen Petrie out of Baylor. Every single time I watch this kid's film, I see a lot of Buda Baker. I see a lot of Tyrann Mathieu. I think that the biggest thing about him is there's not really a good home for him. When he was at Baylor in the defense underneath Matt Rhule, he was more of a safety. When he was underneath Dave Aranda, he played the star position, which is like the nickel hybrid linebacker. So they wanted him to play the run. They wanted him to be physical in coverage. But when he was not at the Senior Bowl, the Jets defense played him as a free and as a strong safety on the back end in a cover two and a cover four look. He looked phenomenal. I mean, he was making plays left and right. He had great closing speed, still had the agility of what you were looking for. Absolute fire type of tackler, has the intangibles of everyone likes, great locker room presence. I talked to a scout not too long ago about him, and he said, this is the guy who is going to lead your team out of the locker room, and you want him on your roster simply because of that. So Petrie is probably one. And then the small school name that I think everybody needs to understand and needs to look at and just continuously watch what he can do, Jarrett Stearns from the likes of Western Kentucky. He is an absolute fire receiver who put up massive production with Bailey Zappe this past year. And nobody seems to be talking about him. I mean, when you watch his film, he's got that good 4-3 speed. He's really good after the catch. He has good hands. He doesn't really drop that many passes. And he has an immense route tree. Like what he was able to do coming over from Houston Baptist to the FBS level and just consistently build with that, that says a lot about Zach Kittley, who's now the offensive coordinator at Texas Tech. It says a lot about Bailey Zappe and his connection. So I would not be shocked to see him be like a late round flyer in round 6 or round 7, make an immediate impact on some roster. He's going to find himself a home in the NFL, and he is going to impress a lot of people wondering how the hell he fell that far.
Yeah, good name. And I only know that name because I bet myself a handful of Western Kentucky overs, and he was a vital part of that offense. So good call outs from Cole Thompson, our draft expert. Again, let everyone know quickly where they can find your draft coverage all weekend long.
You can go ahead and check me out at fannation.com. Click on a certain team. Probably my work's featured on one of those in the NFL tab. You can also listen to me from 2 a.m. to 6 a.m. every single morning on Just Saying It, part of the SportsMap Radio Network. And this Thursday, we will be doing the live draft show from SportsMap Radio. All 32 picks in the first round, instant analysis. Myself and Jeff Biggs will be breaking down every single selection. You're not going to want to miss it. Starts at 7 p.m., right when the Jacksonville Jaguars are on the clock.
So the 2 a.m. to 6 a.m. show, Cole, what's the sleep schedule these days? How are you working that?
I sleep like a firefighter. It's really in shifts. I kid you not. I go to sleep like at 10:30, wake up at 1, go to sleep at like 6:30, wake up at like 9, and that's my sleep.
Love it. Good stuff. Hey, Cole Thompson, have a good draft. Thanks again for hopping on. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Alex.
Appreciate all the input from Cole there. And Alex, I got to say, I have no faith in the Giants doing anything correctly this season. Once again.
So you don't think they're going to handle picks 5 and 7 correctly on Thursday?
I don't think they've handled any picks correctly. They're probably going to go out. They're going to get a wide receiver and they're going to get a running back. And nothing good is going to come from it.
And they'll both stink and they won't work with Daniel Jones. Perfect. Awesome.
Exactly. Right.
Yeah, no, it'll be entertaining to see what happens this weekend. No idea what Bill and the Patriots are going to do, but definitely worth tuning in this weekend. Always appreciate having Cole joining the show as well.
Let's hashtag always end with food.
Yes, brought to you by Toasty Bites. Promo code COL20 at toasty.com/COL for the perfect on-the-go healthy snack. It's all pastry related on Always End With Food this week. I'll start with a new donut that I don't know if I'd ever had in my 30-something year existence going to Dunkin' Donuts, Mike. Have you ever gotten the toasted coconut donut there?
Well, I don't like coconuts, so no. God, no.
I'm not really a huge fan either, but I got it on a whim on an afternoon, just getting a spare, and it's fantastic. I'm not really even a big coconut guy either, so just report to the masses, coconut donut, Dunkin' Donuts, give it a try. I think you'll be surprised. No, that's my report for the week.
All right. As becoming pretty routine here for me, I made babka this weekend.
Yeah, you are. I mean, I'm not going to say addicted, but you're in definitely a trance.
You know, with babka I'm testing different recipes.
I see.
For
I
the
see
eventual babka bakery that I will open. I had this thought Thursday night you know what's a great flavor combination is just classic is chocolate and orange.
And I just saw that on baking competition recently.
We should be doing that in a babka. So I made babka. I put orange zest in the dough, did a chocolate filling, and then I made a orange syrup, which you do by putting orange peel in your sugar and water when you simmer it to make it into syrup. And then I, you know, kept the orange peel in there and let it keep simmering and made candied orange peel to go on top of the babka.
Wow.
And it was maybe my biggest triumph so far.
Yeah, that must have been a nice look too. I love it. Cool. You can check out our food content at Always End With Food Pod on Instagram. Again, for Michael, I'm Alex. Thanks to everyone for tuning in. We'll see you next week for what could be a holy moly big time guest. Regardless of who it is, you're going to want to tune in. We'll see you next week.